Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
Hello and welcome to the Property Exchange podcast. This time, we look ahead to the housing market impact of the government's spring budget. In this episode, we're focusing on the forthcoming budget, what Chancellor Jeremy Hunt is expected to say about housing and interest rates, and what we think he should be saying. The disastrous mini-budget of last autumn led to a sharp rise in mortgage rates. As we talk here in early March, the cost of deals has been coming down, but obtaining finance remains a huge challenge, whether you're climbing onto the ladder or want to move upwards. The government has rowed back on its promises to deliver 300,000 new homes a year. There's now a big debate as to what this means for house prices and the Conservatives' chances of re-election. Does the government still want to turn generation rent into generation buy? Rents are rising sharply as landlords sell up. They've been hit by the harsher landlord tax regime and can't make the sums work any longer. An influential House of Commons committee says that there should be a rethink of those tax rules. Should the Chancellor be listening to this? Meanwhile, stamp duty acts as a deterrent to downsizing. A change to the rules could get people selling larger houses and replenish the government's coffers. But a cut would be really controversial. Is the Chancellor prepared to take such action? To try and find out what we should expect, I'm joined by Dominic Agace, CEO of Winkworth, and to guide us through the current mortgage maze, we have Anthony Emerson of Trinity Financial. First to you, Dominic, and before we get on to the nitty-gritty of the budget, there seems to be a lot of apparently conflicting reports out there at the moment as to the state of the market so far in 2023. Some suggest there's a lot of activity. Others are saying prices are falling. What are you seeing so far?
Yeah, it's a good point. There's a lot of different opinions coming through the sort of news flow. And I think part of that is the timing of data release. So some of it's talking about periods from last year and some of it's from current activity. And obviously, our data is current activity. So last year, you know, we had the sort of early Christmas, as we talked about. And this year, we've sort of woken up as a new market. And I'm pleased to say it's on the, I mean, as you know, I've had the been on the optimistic end of the spectrum from even into October when things looked a bit bleak in terms of Liz's budget. But I'm pleased to say that seems to be playing out. I mean, we're looking at activity, you know, not unexpectedly long way below last year, but ahead of what I would call, I suppose, the last normal year, which is, you know, 2019 before the pandemic years and the influence that had on a sort of property boom for the last 2 years.
One of the things that I think sometimes the reports on house prices don't bring out is that prices may be slipping now, but that the pandemic gain in the average house price was huge.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's such a nuanced thing. I mean, coming up with house prices for the UK is a sort of crazy thing in itself to some extent. I mean, there's so many micro markets and different influences that one broad number doesn't really do the job. So it does depend, you know, the cliche where you are, and it is a hyper local market. I think what I would say is I think the records were being set in August last year. That was probably, I suppose, the peak if you look back on it now. Every property was hitting new records in the street, and that's what people's aspirations were. And so prices were being pushed to set a new record. And that's stopped. I mean, that's what has happened. So the adjustment now is that, you know, you probably won't be getting the price that you would in August when you were pushing new records. You may not sell above what your neighbour sold for. And that's a bit of adjustment. So I think you're talking in those terms. I mean, there's lots of data out there talking about sort of 2-3% or 1% decline annually. So these are, you know, these are significant but relatively small percentages. And I think we're heading for, I suppose, my view was from the start, which is a sort of soft landing as we adjust to higher cost of finance, but with a solid employment market, then you know, we see a reduction in transactions, but not a large decline in prices.
So against that background, what do you want to hear the Chancellor say in the budget?
Yeah, so it's always what one wants and what one gets, isn't it, really? I thought about this, and I think it's, for me, it all centres around, you know, supply. The property market is a hugely political area now. It's a vote winner for both parties. They see it as that, and they're sort of going for it accordingly. And we're beginning to enter an election sort of campaign. I mean, we're not quite there, but this is for the second budget before the election. So we don't expect to see much dramatic stuff being announced that might prove unpopular to constituencies they're trying to build. What I would like to see is a focus on supply. And I think that comes down to three parts, really. So looking at, you know, building more houses, that's critical to the whole solution, making more of the housing stock we've got. So that's downsizing. What are the policies about encouraging downsizing and making our housing stock more efficient so we don't have four-bedroom houses filled by one person, which clearly is potentially blocking a young family from moving up the ladder for the space they need for their children. And the other part of making it more efficient is really looking at the buy-to-let sector and the private rental sector and how we... You know, have we gone too far on that? We want to tread a line of improved standards. We want to make it a better place for long-term tenants, clearly. But we do need it. And I think if you go, you know, some of the changes perhaps need to be looked at this moment. So when we talk about this, and I'm sure Anthony will share a lot of his aspects or a lot of views from the finance point of view. But the kind of, you know, there's an advantage to a homeowner through the additional stamp duty investor pays. Do we need also to have removed the interest relief on the mortgages? That is causing, you know, margins to reduce for landlords, which might be underwater, and so a sell-off. And with a sell-off, you know, we're seeing a bit of a crisis in the lettings market because build-to-rent hasn't come on stream in the numbers that are required to offset that.
I think it was very interesting what the House of Commons Select Committee had to say about the government's reforms to the private rented sector. And one of the points that they did make is maybe that the government should look again at the landlord tax regime. I would encourage anybody who's a landlord to take a look at what the committee had to say, because they made some very trenchant points. Coming back to government measures, in order to boost supply, should there be a replacement for Help to Buy, which was withdrawn this year?
I think so. I think we need to look at a lot of parts to boost the supply side. I mean, you know, we need the house builders to build the houses. The government doesn't build the houses. So how do we get them to build houses? And there are two. There's the planning part, and, you know, it was a bit depressing of late to see that some of the statistics around the review. Broadly, the Conservatives are made up of multiple parties at the moment with different agendas, and that has dented, in the view of the House Builders Federation, amongst others, the number of homes that will be built in the coming years. And it's talking of a drop-off from sort of 230,000 last year to 110,000 by 2030, which is well below the 300,000 manifesto promise, which is now advisory, apparently. So, you know, that planning and that policy and a coherent long-term policy needs to be put in place for supply to allow developers to build, and actually local developers. So it's not so complicated that local developers who are more perhaps sympathetic to local areas that they've grown up in can build more houses for us. And on the support, so the buy side, clearly Help to Buy, you know, it's supporting first-time buyers into, you know, flats to make their own, and it's providing the comfort for developers to build blocks of flats, which is what we need them to do. So I think they both need to be looked at.
So to get back to that central pledge of turning Gen Rent into Gen Buy, as the former Prime Minister used to call it. Now, can we just focus for a moment on landlords and the tax reforms that are driving them from the industry? When you talk to landlords, what are they telling you about what their plans are?
I think we don't see very many new buy-to-let investors in our offices, if ever, really. It's a bit of a rare occurrence from what it was. So I think, you know, there's a lot of... negative sentiment. They feel that they're being, you know, put, the woes of the social housing is put on the private landlords. And I think some of them are looking at it and either they're consolidating their portfolios or looking at it and thinking, is the direction of travel now so negative that really they just want me out and I should be considering exiting the sector? And I, you know, that's negative. I'm not, you say obviously the government wants a generation sort of buy home ownership, not generation rent. But I think the healthy housing market is where there's a blend of all types. You know, some people do want to rent. It's very convenient for changing job locations. You know, just because your job moves doesn't mean you should have to buy a house. You should be able to live in a lovely area, in a property that's individual, has its own characteristics. So I think a blend is important. It is concerning that, you know, what would really be best, the best thing that would happen is that, you know, the measures, the bill to rent would be in place to, you know, offset the reduction that we've seen in landlords, which has been accelerated by the pandemic, as a lot of things have. So I think we need to address it. I think it needs to be addressed in the short term, actually. I don't think we can wait for more to be built through the bill to rent sector. I think perhaps they need to look at the fact that rents are rising quickly and the availability is so short. You know, we're hearing of 45 tenants looking for one flat. So I would suggest reversing something such as the interest relief, the measures they made to remove the interest relief on mortgages, which has meant that the incomes don't stack up for landlords, certainly in the short term would be a good idea.
So we want Chancellor Jeremy Hunt to say something on the rental market. On taxes, inheritance tax, what do you think he should be doing?
Again, so fitting my sort of three parts of my housing policy, I'd say downsizing is critical and I don't think it's really been addressed. We need to make people comfortable and benefit on a choice base, on their own choice, you know, have their own individual choices to make. And I think that's through tax incentives. So I think, you know, what will encourage elder empty nesters perhaps to move to right size, as I like to call it, so that they can release some cash, spend the money whilst they're able to travel the world, and obviously free up housing for the next generation to move up with their sort of growing families. And I think that should be done in a positive way, and that should be done by providing the right accommodation, certainly through retirement villages, etc. But also, perhaps it can be done through looking at inheritance tax for those that do downsize at the right point in lifestyle. And perhaps we need to target that generation to encourage them through stamp duty and inheritance tax to free up the housing stock, because there are many benefits that will come from that, and it will undoubtedly save the government huge sums in other areas.
So give me a sense of how you think some reforms to inheritance tax could change people's willingness to move.
Yeah, so actually the detail of the policy is always going to be a challenge, isn't it? I think simply it's a reduction, isn't it? You've got to work out what are the triggers for that generation. It's about empty rooms, isn't it? And providing a benefit if you trade down and you have three empty rooms in your house and you sell that house and move into a house with, or flat or whatever you want to be with two rooms, then, you know, that would be the trigger for a benefit. And I think there's a lot of work that people can do on that I won't pretend to do here on this podcast. But I think that would, you know, everyone wants to support the next generation. So it'd be a really nice thing that people feel that by moving, they are supporting the next generation. And it would help us all a lot.
The Chancellor will definitely touch on interest rates. And we've been seeing the cost of mortgage deals coming down since that disastrous mini budget. When you're talking to the clients, how are they perceiving the mortgage market and the kind of rates they can expect to pay to buy?
I mean, I think everyone was a bit shocked at the end of last year about where things were going and sort of all counting their pennies, looking at the rates when they come off their fixed terms and concerned. And I think that anxiety, luckily, has abated somewhat now. And I think Antony will be able to talk to a much greater degree than me on this, but I think people are now settling at what they realise is probably a more natural long-term position. So I think the anxiety has faded. I think there's probably a lot of things that are also coming out of that. You know, people are consolidating lifestyles as part of, you know, adaptation to a higher cost of finance, which is a significant influence on all of our lives. There are lots of cash-only owners, but they're also, you know, 50% of us also do have mortgages.
Right. On that basis, I think it's now time, Antony, to find out from you what's happening in that mortgage market. Cost of fixed rate deals, what's happening to that? How do they compare with trackers? Tell us what you're seeing there at the battlefield that is the mortgage market.
And I think we have seen the mortgage market improve fairly significantly since that disastrous budget. Interest rates during that sort of peak period got up as high as around about 6.5%, which when we were looking at, you know, deals maybe 6 months prior to that, almost around about, you know, 1% for a 5-year fixed rate, you can see that that's a very significant change in a very short space of time. Fixed rates now have come down fairly significantly, and the lenders are doing their absolute utmost to try and support the first-time buyers into the market. We have seen rates drop down for, you know, 95% loan-to-value products on a 5-year basis to rates as low as 4.94 for a 5-year fixed rate. And 90% loan-to-values are around about 4.47, and 60% loan-to-values are only 3.99. So we have seen the narrowest margin that we've seen in a very, very long time between 60% lending and 95% lending.
That's a very interesting development. Why is this happening?
I think the cost of funds is still there because of inflation. And I think the lenders can't trim their bottom line rate, being that 60% margin, much lower, because your general saver these days is earning 3-3.5%. So there's not much margin for them to be able to cut further. What they are doing, though, is through the various different schemes and incentives, trying to keep that mortgage market alive by incentivizing first-time buyers, because without them, we don't have the fuel for the rest of the chain to be able to move. First-time buyers need to come into the market to be able to allow the person who's selling that to move up and upgrade and move higher up the level. And, you know, the rates that are being offered are trying to entice them in. Lenders are also doing things like, you know, the deposit unlock scheme and all these other incentives to try and allow people to borrow more. I mean, some lenders are lending 5.5 times income to qualifying buyers to allow them to try and afford that little bit more. Now that Help to Buy has been removed, people have to be able to afford to borrow the larger sums to be able to buy the houses that we need.
When you say deposit unlock, how does that work?
Deposit unlock is a new scheme that's been built in with a reinsurer and the Federation of Home Builders, and they have come up with a product that allows qualifying developers and clients who want to buy, and it's not only first-time buyers, it's next-time buyers as well. They have to apply to the builder. They have to get a loan confirmation letter from the house builder. That is then passed on to the lender via the mortgage broker, and that deposit unlock will allow people to qualify for them to borrow up to 90 or 95% loan to value on flats and houses. So it also allows certain lenders to give you 5.5 times income to allow you to afford to be able to make that little bit higher move up the ladder.
So who would the kind of applicant be for that scheme?
That scheme is generally any buyer who's looking, as long as they're buying it to be their own main residence, and it is only new build homes on those schemes. So, you know, it is something that has come in order to try and stimulate the home builders to keep on building, to allow them to be able to move their stock. And for people who are relatively young, haven't yet had the opportunity to build up a significant deposit to get onto the housing ladder. But they are using this thing called a mortgage indemnity guarantee, which is something that happens in the background, doesn't affect the applicants directly, but that indemnity guarantee insures the lender against negative equity in the future.
So they're really constructing a kind of son of Help to Buy here?
In a way, it's an assistance to first-time buyers, but Help to Buy was a shared ownership sort of position, and your mortgage costs were a hell of a lot lower because of the fact that you didn't have to own 100% of the property. In these deposit unlock schemes, you will own 100% of the property. You just have to put in far, far less deposit. Help to Buy allowed you to put in a 5% deposit, but then, you know, take up to 40% equity share from the developer.
Now, against this background, what kinds of deal are most people opting for? Do they want a fixed rate, or are they thinking maybe a tracker just in case fixed rate deals fall further?
I think because the Bank of England base rate has risen so significantly in the last 6 months, and we've also seen the fixed rates come down so much over the last 6 months, it really depends on what you feel the Bank of England base rate is going to do in the coming 2 years. If you feel that the economy is going to take over as being the main driver and that Bank of England base rate has to be trimmed to make money cheaper and stimulate the economy, then a tracker rate is actually something that's quite attractive. However, with Bank of England base rate plus 0.14 being one of the cheapest trackers out there at the moment, and fixed rates being as low as 3.99, you have to really believe in that story that the Bank of England base rate is going to come down and come down relatively soon in order for it to be more beneficial now than some of the fixed rates available.
Now, landlords, what kind of deals are on offer for them?
Landlords have seen a very big change in the way that they conduct their business. We've seen the Bank of England base rate rise. We've seen all the rates and the stress tests rise in order for them to be able to meet affordability. We are seeing quite a big exodus in the coming year. We believe as high as possibly 300,000 less properties going to be available on the rental sector because of the fact that people are selling up because the numbers just don't work. But there are some nice things that are available insofar as we have got lenders doing a thing called top slicing, where they allow you to use your earned income rather than having to have a much higher rental yield for the property. That allows those people to borrow more to allow them to have the borrowing capacity to buy the houses that they want, or even merely just to refinance the houses that they already have.
So the central message of what you're saying, whether you're a landlord, a first-time buyer, or somebody moving up the ladder, the lenders want to lend and they are willing to make some compromises to be able to give you that money.
They are, but I think they are being somewhat curtailed by the government and what the government is putting on them to make their rental stress tests like and the way that they want everything to be calculated. We have got landlords now being taxed on their gross rental yield at their nominal tax rate. If you're a lower rate taxpayer, you do get that 20% benefit given back to you. But the vast majority of landlords tend to be higher rate taxpayers, so they are losing a significant portion of their gross rental income before they then have to pay for the maintenance of the property, the mortgage payments, the cost to the estate agents and all the other bits and pieces. And we've also got a looming problem with this energy performance certificate, which every rental property needs to be at least a C rating by 2025. If that has to come into play in its current sort of way and the way they calculate energy performance certificate ratings, you're going to have to see landlords investing tens of thousands of pounds into their properties to be able to bring them up to specification. Faced with very little profit in the in their sort of margins at the moment, to have to then pay that on top might just be a step too far. It might be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
So anybody listening to this is going to basically conclude that rents are just headed further upward. What would you like to hear the Chancellor say about the rental market in the budget?
I agree with what Dominic was saying earlier insofar as we do need to see them maybe have a rethink on the way that we are taxed. Taxing someone on their gross rental is a little bit unfair. I think it is a business at the end of the day, and businesses are able to offset their costs, and landlords should be absolutely no different. I think we have to have clarity on exactly what this EPC situation is going to be, because there are certain properties in London that just cannot reach that level. The vast majority of the EPC reports that I've read where, you know, the property hasn't met a C rating as it stands today are requiring internal or external insulation to be put into the property. And I mean, that's a massive imposition. You can't do that kind of work with a tenant in situ. It's not like you're going in and replacing the windows and replacing the boiler. It's a massive amount of work. How are we going to implement this? How are we going to get it all done in time? I just can't see the practicality of it.
Yeah, practicality, that has got to be the bedrock of policy on the rental sector. And talking about policies, I'm going to ask you, Dominic, now, who's making the most convincing noises on housing policy, the Conservatives or Labour?
Well, I think the nearer the election we get, the more it's going to be a bit concerning some of the comments that come out. Unfortunately, as I was saying earlier, it's such a political area now that it's sort of a vote winner rather than a sort of long-term policy debate. So there are weaknesses in both, unfortunately. I think, as I said, the key part is supply, having a plan to build houses to meet demand. You know, that will stabilise prices, then that will create lower rent increases, etc. You know, all these things will happen if you have more properties. There's no real way around that. So that's why it's a bit distressing that the latest actions perhaps within the Conservative Party have sort of damaged new homes, the number of new homes predicted to being built. On the Labour point of view, you know, I think they've got, you know, they're talking about building lots of houses. That's, you know, that's what the Conservatives were doing in the manifesto. And that's great news if they're talking about 300,000 target. Fantastic. That's a big tick. On the other hand, they're going on other areas which are more concerning. You know, there's conversations around rent caps, which I think take things a bit far. You know, clearly, again, you need supply. If you put rent caps in place, the models, not only for private landlords, but for build-to-rent investors, you know, this was sold as a product for institutions to invest in for long-term income, tracking slightly above inflation, whilst providing accommodation for everyone, and was the future. Now, if you remove the slightly tracking above inflation rent over a 10-year period, then these institutions won't invest in these blocks which will not be built. So again, there's a big negative in that one as well. So I think the big draw I have out of it all is you know, I'm not sure I even know the housing minister at the moment. I've sort of lost track. So we need it to be depoliticised. We need a longer term plan. It's a long term challenge for the UK and needs to be met accordingly, really. So I'm not particularly positive on either, actually.
So our message to politicians of all colours is, you need to take a reality check on housing. Now, thank you so much, Dominic and Anthony, for joining us for this episode of The Property Exchange and giving us so many topics on which to debate. Do subscribe and join us for next month's podcast, where we'll be talking about another hot topic in the property market. If you want to know more, then be sure to subscribe.
This has been the Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox. For more episodes, make sure to subscribe to your favourite podcast provider.